This episode of Tub Talk is brought to you by Avast Business. With over 435 million active users of Avast products, if you haven't already taken a look at what Avast Business is offering, now might be the time. Visit tubblog.co.uk/Avast for all the links to the details. Right now, though, let's jump into our featured interview. Hi team, Richard Tubb here with another episode of Tub Talk, and I'm joined today by Jaya Ballou. Now, Jaya is Avast Chief Information Security Officer, CISO for short, and she joined Avast in October 2019. Now, previously, Jaya held the position of CISO at KPN, the largest telecommunications carrier in the Netherlands, where she established and led its security team, whose best practice in strategy and policy are today recognized as world-leading. Prior to this, Jaya also held the position of practice lead lawful interception at Verizon and also worked at France Telecom as a technical security specialist. Jaya is formally recognized within the list of the top 100 CISOs globally and ranks amongst the top 100 security influencers worldwide. In 2019, she was also selected as one of the 50 most inspiring women in the Netherlands by Inspiring 50, a nonprofit aimed at raising diversity in technology by making female role models in technology more visible. Jaya, thanks for joining us today.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
So for people who are unfamiliar with the term Chief Information Security Officer, CISO, how would you explain what a CISO is?
CISO is basically the place where the buck stops in terms of security. So it's the place that's not only supposed to provide the vision and the mission of security for an organization, but also the plan going forward and how to make sure you have a good understanding of the risks that you're facing and the things you're doing to kind of stop those risks from manifesting.
Understood. Now, Avast are one of the world's top security vendors, if not the world's top security vendor. So they've got resources for a chief information security officer, but many of the listeners to this podcast will be looking after, there will be managed service providers, IT solution providers, looking after small and medium-sized businesses, businesses that perhaps don't have the budget for somebody of your experience there. So I was wondering, in terms of the CISO-less MSP or the CISO-less SMB, what is the how would an MSP explain the need for cybersecurity to a small business?
You know, I think fundamentally the need for cybersecurity is the same for any business. You just need to make sure that you can keep doing business at the end of the day. And if cybersecurity poses a threat to that continuity of doing business, then you need to be able to handle it effectively. It's different in a security company where the core security is your business. I always used to think it made things easier, but actually that's not the case. Pretty much all companies need to do the same things. They need to understand, you know, where their biggest headaches are coming from. They need to look for those headaches on their network systems and data, and then they need to be able to act on them when they occur. And that's basically it. If we get those three things right, that's valid for like a multinational as well as a bakery.
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. And I've seen a shift over the past few years where cybersecurity previously was considered something that enterprise companies had to worry about, but that small businesses felt as though they were immune to. That's changed though, hasn't it? Anybody is a target now for cyber criminals.
I think that's actually been the case for a really long time. So if you take a look at the data breaches, it tends to be the companies that think, you know, it'll happen somewhere else, but not with me. They're not interested in my data. They're not targeting me. But I think we tend to forget that there's not only targeted attackers out there, that there's also very opportunistic attackers that really don't care who they hit, as long as they hit someone. And you see this kind of prevalence happening specifically in areas like ransomware, where you just see a huge swathe of the population that are very ill-equipped to be able to like figure out that it's going to attack them. And when they do, because of their lack of preparedness to handle the situation, are completely victimized and often wind up even paying the ransom. And I think that's actually the status of the entire situation, that they feel so desperate to regain that business continuity, to just kind of get back to, you know, business as usual, that they'll just pay the bad guys without any guarantee that they'll ever get their data back.
Yeah. How frustrating do you find that when you see that in the world?
It's like everything else, you know, it's like hurting the weakest in our population. I feel the same way about those types of events as I would about any other vulnerable population being attacked, you know, whether that's animals or, you know, just anyone that can't fend for themselves. I feel like we have a responsibility as a planet to help them. And not just that the companies that are capable of doing it should do it for themselves. I think we have a responsibility to protect each other in this ecosystem that we've created.
Yeah, agreed. So going back to what we were saying about small businesses, and perhaps we've got the press to thank this. They highlight a lot of the security challenges nowadays. And so more and more people, especially small businesses, are realizing this can happen to anyone. This isn't just the realm of enterprises and big businesses. Cyber criminals target anybody. But for those MSPs who are listening, and perhaps they've got frustrated where they've been speaking to small businesses, and these small businesses have been saying, I don't think it will happen to us.
Yeah.
How would you advise them to get the message across to those small businesses that everybody is a target?
Well, you know, we just need to look. I'm really big on like evidence-based material. I don't believe in fear, uncertainty, and doubt is the way to get the message across. But just look at the facts. I mean, if it comes to individual attackers who are opportunistic and just hacking for fun, or people who are hacking from a profit perspective as cyber criminals, they really don't care who they hit. But look at the facts. So to even the state-sponsored malware, which normally gets pushed as, you know, this is only highly targeted, it's focused on very specific entities. Actually, that's not the case. If you take a look at for example, Regent, the malware that was used to infect a very large telecommunications operator that supposedly originated from a combination of the NSA and the GCHQ working together to target this operator, what you'll actually see is that the space of verified infections actually went and targeted a whole bunch of small, medium enterprise and private individuals in that swathe. And those are not just reports that we've done, but also take a look at the reports that came out of Regen from our competitors like Kaspersky and Symantec. They point to the same evidence that small businesses do need to be concerned about even state-sponsored attacks, because they're caught in the collateral damage that ensues, because we are also interconnected with each other.
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. Now, going back to something you said earlier, that you're a big fan of using, you know, metrics, statistics to get this across rather than fear, uncertainty, and doubt. Totally agree with this. What metrics or KPIs would you suggest that MSPs use to measure security effectiveness? What KPIs should an SMB focus on?
Yeah, so actually, I don't think the difference here is very large. I think the only thing you need to think about is the fact that when you get bigger as a company, you tend to do more of everything. It doesn't mean that you necessarily add a greater degree of diversity, but you potentially add a greater degree of depth to the things that you're covering. But for me, the single metric, if we would do one thing that would signify the actual maturity of any organization, big or small, that would be to measure the average time to respond to vulnerabilities and to incidents. That's it. And I've been saying that, you know, from when I was working at KPN, when I was working at Verizon, and I say that here as well. If we do one metric to signify maturity, it's that those days in between. Because for me, that is the opportunity time for a hacker to get in and do all kinds of damage. If we have known vulnerabilities, because we have a vulnerability scanner, and there are free ones out there, as well as paid for services that will scan both your outside perimeter and the inside of your network for vulnerabilities. Once we know about something that's weak, how long does it take our organizations to step up and fix the vulnerability? That time in between, that open and close moment, that says everything about how ready you are to cope with new issues as they come along. Specifically, about like the severity of those incidents and that closure time. So if we see, for example, the latest Microsoft Patch Tuesday, So if we take a look at those types of high critical, remote code execution type of vulnerabilities, if we don't get them closed within 24 or 48 hours, it tells you everything you need to know about the preparedness of an organization.
Yeah. Do you think this could be used as a sales tool, an opportunity for MSPs as well to say, hey, look, here is our effective sort of closure time to these threats? Could this be used as a metric in the industry to sort of help people understand who's doing this well and who isn't?
I'm not so fond of it being a sales tactic. I don't know if that might be a perverse incentive. But what I am genuinely a fan of is to have this sort of mature understanding that we're never going to prevent vulnerabilities from happening. If you take a look at some of the code that's out there, we've got millions and millions of lines of code. It is nearly impossible to weed out all of the bugs, either accidental or intentionally placed. So the smartest way to deal with it is to say, we know it's going to happen. We know stuff is going to go wrong, but we're going to be able to roll with the punches better, faster, smarter than the attacker. And I think that's all that anyone can really do. So rather than using it as a sales incentive, which again might get you to only fix the stuff on the outside and not on the inside, I would rather be a proponent of good security practice as a level of maturity that is part of your whole corporate responsibility.
Got it. So you're working with small businesses, you're working with MSPs across the world every single day on cybersecurity threats. What are the top cybersecurity threats that you're seeing emerging that are facing SMBs today?
Again, I really think that the biggest problem is the fact that MSPs don't have a lot of budget and resource and really a devotion in terms of a focus, someone who's only looking at security. So as a result, they tend to be not lacking necessarily in their defense, but just slower to react or not having all of the preparedness enabled. Look, no one's going to be a victim of ransomware if they have online and offline backups. And they're disciplined about it. It's just a company who doesn't consider this as part of their core business practices. They're the ones that we need to worry about. So I think that the biggest threats that we see are those threats that take advantage of that lack of resource, the lack of ability to plan. So ransomware for sure. Phishing attempts are still rather successful. Supply chain attacks. And the ability to keep on top of all of the things that are regularly going wrong and, where there are patches, but the SMB just needs catch-up time. That catch-up time leaves them open. Like if you saw the Citrix vulnerability recently, what you saw is at the time that the patch was available, there were already active exploits. So the SMB might not be agile or quick enough to have known that. And even when they applied the patch, have had the ability to do forensics as well, which was what would have been required had you used Citrix.
Yeah. Now, you've mentioned limited budget, limited IT resources. Absolutely, there's going to be a lot of MSPs listening to this and saying, yeah, absolutely get that. What would you say is the best cyber defense strategy that MSPs can recommend to their SMBs who perhaps don't have the budget to help keep them safe? What are the absolute essentials that you reckon that SMB should be adopting nowadays?
There's this great quote from Sun Tzu, which is try to handle problems when they are small. And I think this is something that an SMB can absolutely do. Look, large companies have difficulty being quick, being agile, rolling with certain things, but an SMB can take advantage of the lack of bureaucracy and optimize on its strength of being small. And think about how to plan ahead. So, before there is an actual crisis, plan ahead by having, for example, either those backups or an antivirus or having some form of network monitoring and basic defense or having a really simple automated patching regime. These are small steps, baby steps. But if we plan them ahead of the actual incident, then we don't have to play super powerful crisis management later.
Yeah, I didn't expect to hear Sun Tzu quoted in a an interview on cybersecurity. I like it. That's hardcore. So I want to change tact ever so slightly here. So we've talked about cybersecurity. One of the things that I think has encouraged greater awareness of cybersecurity is compliance. So here in Europe, we've got GDPR, California, other places around the world. There's lots of regional data compliance rules now. And this is forcing businesses to take cybersecurity seriously. How would you recommend that an SMB ensure that they stay on top of these varying compliance routines?
Well, you know, I have to say that in general, I realize that this is not going to make me very popular, but I believe that compliance is the floor and not the ceiling. Oh. So compliance is kind of like the bare minimum of things you need to do, but it doesn't ensure any form of security. And for an SMB, I would say that if you aim for security, you'll hit compliance every time. So focus on security and privacy. Like, I mean, like there is going to be a lot of compliance regulation and it's going to keep coming. I would say that that is not the place to keep your eyeball. You know, that's something that you need to say that's going to happen. It's going to keep happening. But I want to focus on that ceiling of good security and good privacy practice. And that's where we should aim. And if we look there, we'll land there instead of just doing that compliance minimum, because compliance has to be something that everyone can adopt and everyone can manage. But it's not really aiming for, you know, what are the smartest things we can do? How can we plan ahead? How can we think about smart partnerships to ensure that our supply chain is doing the same practices we are? And those are things that I think an SMB can be very powerful and act on. Again, using their size, again, using their ability to like leverage those smart partnerships and their budget to do it right in the beginning.
I love that.
Without waiting for the compliance to hit. Sorry.
No, I absolutely love that approach, that compliance is the bare minimum, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
And, striving for more than compliance should be the way forward for every business. Yeah, I love that approach. Yeah. So I we've got one of the world's leading cybersecurity experts on the line here. I'm going to try and get a little bit of free consultancy here, Jerry, if I can. In the event of an SMB experiencing a cybersecurity attack, what would your recommendation be for a response plan?
Well, this is one of those things where I say plan ahead, right? So you kind of have to deal with... And you can't plan for everything, but you kind of have to have a plan of, okay, let's assume something bad happens. You know, how am I going to figure out what happened? And I think that it's not just SMBs. This is every company. They want to jump over that incident as quickly as possible, get back to business as usual, forget that it ever happened, push it way behind them. But never waste a good incident when it does happen. That's, you know, a rule of thumb. But hopefully, if it happens, you're not going to wipe all the data that happened during the incident to tell you what on earth went wrong, because then you actually destroy your own ability to learn from that event and then move on. Also, to understand the scope or the extent of damage, it becomes really important to preserve that forensic material and that evidence. So a couple of things. First of all, get a plan, you know, understand what you will do with the things that you can foresee. You can't foresee it all. So then for that, have a backup strategy of a partner who you can work with. One of the options for you there is to work with a forensics company on retainer, so that if something happens, you've got someone who will immediately be able to help you and be on site, you know, helping you get back to business as usual. And again, there, like, plan ahead. You don't want to have all these unexpected costs. So know what the tariff is and know, you know, if they're going to try to extort you at the moment of the actual incident. So all of these things are really important. And I would say the third thing is really have a clue about all of those super, super, super vital assets, so that for that duration of that incident, you can still continue to do business. So whether that means, you know, understanding that the vital asset was compromised and having a backup, or having like a disaster recovery plan, even if it's on paper or in an Excel sheet, that is a great thing. And so many large companies don't have it. So again, here, take advantage of the size to think intelligently about this. If you can't be bigger, you got to be smarter.
Yeah, be nimble about it. Are there any online resources that you would recommend that SMBs check out to help put together this response plan?
Oh, there's so much online. You know, I don't have the one. I try to open source everything that I've ever worked on through my career. So, like, when I was at KPN, we open sourced our information security policy that's out there. I would always say, you know, copy with pride. There's no shame in taking, like, good lessons from others. And if you just Google simple disaster recovery plans, you'll find them. If you, like, all of this stuff, crisis management, all of this stuff is findable thanks to Google and thanks to that open community of security people online.
I love it. And one of my mentors taught me years ago, Jay, to swipe, to steal with integrity and pride from everywhere.
Yeah, I love that. I'm going to use that. Great.
You can swipe that one. So let's talk a little bit.
Sounds like Tinder advice. Sorry. Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about the role that the staff at SMBs play, and specifically how MSPs can educate those staff. So we both know that the weakest link in any security chain is typically the human being. There is no accounting for that. How can SMBs raise cybersecurity awareness amongst their employees?
So I think we tend to forget that we have multiple persona. You know, we're employees and that's all well and good, but we're also humans who have our own private sphere of things we do, and we do those things online as well. So a really simple thing is to, like, you know, have them understand security for themselves, because it's one thing when it's the motivation to understand security is coming from an employer, but it's quite something else when you talk about the motivation of being secure is for the individual, not the employee. And when it's about the individual, it's about being safe online from your family perspective, from your home perspective, from your own online banking situation and your own personal credentials. So I would encourage users to, for example, take their private email addresses and take a look at, for example, the free service of Have I Been Pwned? You know, you can set up an alert for your own email address and just see if that's ever been compromised previously in any data breach on one of the brands you trust. And, like, all of us have been there, all of us, because there are so many data breaches that every day is just another data breach. So it's highly unlikely that you have no addresses in the last X amount of years that was ever found in one of those sites on Have I Been Pwned. That's usually a wake-up call for people who have, you know, no understanding of security, is that one website. From a corporate perspective, from an employee perspective, you could subscribe to a service like SpyCloud. You know, there's a whole bunch of services where you could actually put in your corporate addresses and see if any of those have been used in a potential data breach. And I think anything on the personal realm, you need to do it with the employee, or the employee needs to do it with them by themselves. And there needs to be full understanding about what it is they're seeing. Again, here, I urge caution to not create fear, uncertainty, doubt. You want people to be able to enjoy technology and all of its benefits without worrying about their security and privacy. And they just need to understand that trade-off.
Yeah, I love that advice. And we'll include all of those resources that you mentioned in the show notes for anybody listening to this so they can go and download that as well.
Yeah.
So we've talked about the present state of cybersecurity, and there's some scary stuff out there, but it can be managed. What does the future cybersecurity landscape look like? What emerging technologies do you expect to play a major role in defense in cybersecurity?
Well, you know, there's a lot of hype and buzz around all things AI, but I have to separate here also the fear. Like, there's always questions about, do you see the attackers using artificial intelligence to do super attacks that we can't defend against? And the honest answer is no, we actually don't. There, no one, not us, not our competitors, nobody has seen an AI-delivered attack. The only place where you see it is where there's a bit of machine learning is like domain-generating algorithms, where, you know, they're continuously used. But other than that, an actual AI-based attack against our defenses has yet to be spotted. This is simple for the defenders in the sense that we have a time frame where the advantage is in the hands of the defenders to defend. But that advantage is short-lived. The moment that we don't capitalize on that advantage and shore up all of our defenses globally, we basically are making it easier for the attackers to be able to appropriate the same technology in order to attack, because we will be able to democratize it. It will, the cost of using AI techniques will inevitably decrease. And at that moment, we will be too late. So I really think that this is the time that we actually think about how to use AI, for example, for anomaly detection, for gathering that large amount of data that we have in logs all over the place, that we think about finding a way. For example, there's a framework you might have seen for defenders from MITRE called the MITRE Attack Framework, and it basically shows you the life cycle of an attack and how it would occur. It's a really wonderful framework to use for a defender in order to understand how does the attacker move through the stages of an attack to eventual compromise. And if we use these tactics and try to automate and learn and spot them quicker on the large volume of data we have, I think that would be the best use of for defenders, for AI, to really like understand an attack and understand the different bits of an attack in order to make a complete storyline of what happened.
Yeah. We've talked about a lot of, you know, the implications of cybersecurity and how scary it can be for SMBs. You're at the coalface here. You're working with the biggest companies in the world. You're seeing exploits as they happen, you know, in sort of a real time. What do you get scared about cybersecurity? And what excites you about the role that you do? What excites you about working in cybersecurity?
Well, I'll start with the beginning of that. Do I get scared on the basis of what I see? The thing that makes me the most afraid is our inability as humans to adapt to change. We suck at adopting new standards. We're slow. We are unwilling to face facts. We're unwilling to look at the evidence. We're far more likely to jump at hype, to jump at fear. You know, those are the things that move us. And it is really unfortunate, because I feel like these are like the wrong incentives, the wrong reasons to move. But this is always invariably what works amongst our population. And although that is the case, the fact is that that makes this whole landscape of security incredibly dynamic. It means it is fast moving. And the thing that excites me most about working in the companies that I've worked for is the possibility to have true and meaningful impact to protect the weakest amongst our population.
Yeah, I love that message. I absolutely love it. And it absolutely makes sense. Now, at the top of our interview, I mentioned you are a role model to so many women in IT. You've been wildly successful at what you'll do. You are hugely respected. What is it like working as a woman in IT in a male-dominated industry? Because I've interviewed people like Tracy Pound of CompTIA. I've interviewed Fiona Challice on this podcast. And we're trying to highlight as many successful women in IT as possible. But what is it like working as a woman in a male-dominated industry?
I have to be honest, I don't know any better. I've been doing, it's always been male dominated from the time that I was working in the NOC, you know, in the Network Operations Center, and working in the IT ops team. So, I mean, I've always been with mostly men. But I have to say, like, there are two things here. On the one side, I realize that there is a difference, and but I sometimes forget that I am a woman. What I also forget is the color of my skin and my ethnic origin, which unfortunately also plays a part. Just a personal anecdote, today there was an article in a local newspaper, and the first comment, never read the comments, I know this, never feed the trolls, I know this as well. And rationally, I know all of these things, but the first comment was a racist comment that made a comment about, yeah, you know, this is what you have if you have an Indian employed. And it was actually, it was absolutely non sequitur. It had nothing to do with the article. It was actually no bearing whatsoever. And I forget, because I was raised in the United States and I live in Europe for 20 years, that I am with this background. But I think it's really important not to forget. I think it's really important to remember and not to try to shush it away, but to actually note, yes, I am a woman. Yes, I have this, you know, diverse background, but that has no bearing whatsoever on my knowledge, my skills, nor my capability. And I am damn good at what I do, and I should be able to do my job on only that basis. I don't want to be given any special credit for being a woman or having this diverse background. I only want to be given credit for the things that I can actually help, which are my actions.
Yeah, I love that approach. For any MSPs listening and saying, we want somebody like Jaya working for us, and there's going to be lots of MSPs out there who are thinking that, how can they attract people of your mindset to work within their business?
I think first and foremost, you know, it should be a meritocracy. It should be people who deserve to be where they are, who are like-minded spirits. And that's another thing. Within the security community, there's a lot of like people who know each other, and they cross-recommend and cross-reference each other. So I think like looking and approaching the community for, hey, who do you know, is the way to do it. If you're completely out of that community, go online, go to Twitter, go to Google, go to LinkedIn. These are all places to find like-minded individuals. There are so many good people out there. And it always amazes me that we don't know how to find and attract and encourage them the way that we should. This is also just about outreach from us. If we're going to be really traditional and very closed, we're never going to get those people that are the opposite. So we just need to really extend that hand, I think.
I love it. Now, I found this interview inspiring. I know I'm not going to be the only one when people listen to this. I would love to talk to you much longer. I know we've only got limited time today. So I'd love to have you back at the podcast to go deeper into some of these topics that we talked about, if that would be okay with you.
Oh, I'd love that. Thanks, Richard.
Cool. Yeah. And hopefully we'll get an opportunity to meet in person very soon. But for now, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. If anybody wants to reach out to you after listening to this, perhaps pick your brains or ask about some of the topics that you've talked about, what's the best way for them to find you online, Jaya?
I'm on Twitter. I'm the most active on Twitter. I have to be honest, I'm not that active on LinkedIn. I have like an account, but I don't do that much. It's like I don't know if you've seen the meme of, you know, what does your profile look like on Twitter, Facebook? Yeah. And then there's Tinder at the very end. It's really funny. But I would say Twitter is the best way to reach me.
Cool. And what's your Twitter handle there?
Jaya Ballou, JayaBalloo.
Fantastic. Well, Twitter's my most prevalent platform as well. So I will stay in touch with you on Twitter there. And I'm sure you will get lots of feedback from this episode. So Jaya, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Richard.
Hey folks, Richard here. Thanks for listening today. I know you've got a ton of options for who you listen to nowadays, so I really appreciate your support. Do you have any feedback on this episode? Ideas for future guests? Tweet me at Tubblog using the hashtag TubTalk. I respond to every tweet and really appreciate your feedback. Richard here, and I wanted to give a really big shout out and to say a huge thank you to our friends at Avast for bringing this episode to you. In the face of increasingly complex threats targeting small and medium businesses, yesterday's methods are no longer enough. Cybersecurity must be quicker, smarter, and more reliable than ever before. Avast Business provide a range of powerful, easy-to-deploy security products and management platforms designed for IT solution providers and managed service providers. Avast Business offer a variety of cybersecurity products that are MSP friendly. You can choose from standalone antivirus products, managed antivirus products, CloudCare for layered endpoint and network security services, backup and recovery, content filtering, email security, patch management, and a management console to easily deploy endpoint protection solutions to devices in your client networks. These solutions are all backed by the largest, most globally dispersed threat detection network in the world. If you've not checked out Avast's secure internet gateway, then I'd recommend taking a look at the video demo that Avast's Paul Fenwick and I recorded. It delivers a full security stack as a service that protects users wherever they go. With 30 years as a leading cybersecurity company and over 435 million active users of Avast products, if you haven't already taken a look at what Avast Business is offering, now might be the time. Visit tublog.co.uk/Avast for links to all the details.